As you're listening, don't forget to check out the Professional Amateurs Podcast on YouTube. And while you're there, hit like and subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Hello, everyone. This is episode 28 of Professional Amateurs. No Ryan for the intro part of this podcast. He's currently on Locked On Senators doing their Central Citizen episode. It's his turn in line, so they brought him on. And on that topic, we have the Locked On Senators boys coming on our show. We just finished an interview with them, so we're going to be throwing it over there in about 5 to 10 minutes. But first, we have some hockey news to address. Nathan MacKinnon becomes the highest paid player in the NHL, signing an 8-year contract worth, $100.8 million? Like, $100,000 more per season than Connor McDavid's, and McDavid's was a nice even 100 mil. So he becomes the second triple-digit contract of the cap era. There's been triple-digit contracts before. No, not the cap era. Since there was an 8-year cap. CBA. Yeah, since there's been an 8-year cap on contracts, he's the second guy to reach $1 million on a total contract value. This was a weird one. Like, people, I think some people were even expecting him to take like another discount. I don't know if that was people being satirical. But yeah, I mean, MacKinnon gets his money. He deserves it. He's been underpaid for a very long time. And he's the highest paid player in the NHL now because of it. And so, yeah, Jack, what do you think about it?
Well, I love the pettiness of going just 100K over.
12.6 like per year.
That's clearly, I mean, $100,000 is a lot of money. But clearly when you're making that much, it doesn't matter. Like, that was done very specifically. Yeah. And I love that. And yeah, he's been one of the best contracts for quite a while now. Those 6x6s after entry level got really popular, and his was one of the biggest hits on it. And he's got his cup. Like, he should get paid. Now he doesn't. Not that they're all of a sudden not contenders, but they don't really need to be as worried as a team like, say, Toronto, who hasn't put it together and has too much money tied up in certain players.
There's a good chance the highest paid player in the NHL number changes a few more times in the next few years. I mean, Matthews is coming up in 2 years, and then 2 years after that, it's McDavid. So we're probably looking at MacKinnon to be the highest paid player for the next two. Then Matthews will take that probably pretty easily, and then McDavid. And then who knows? By that time, Connor Bedard will probably be on a second contract. So we'll see what happens there.
And then the important thing to remember there too is it would be cap percentage at that point, because we are expecting the cap.
Right. Well, that, yeah. And so that's all. That's the obvious caveat. But just to simplify things, MacKinnon's highest number ever under the under the new CBA. So that's the new number.
Close enough to what McDavid signed at, where it's.
I think actually MacKinnon's current contract would be less than McDavid's was in terms of cap hit percentage. So I'm just looking at it now. That's just based off memory, but I actually just looked it up. So McDavid's was 12.5 million at a cap hit percentage of 17%, 16.67%. And I'm just going to bring up MacKinnon's contract. So McDavid was 16.67%. And MacKinnon is going to be 15.27%. So MacKinnon's actually like a decent amount less than McDavid's in terms of cap hit percentage, which obviously makes sense. So take it with a grain of salt in terms of MacKinnon being the highest paid player, because when you're looking at cap hit percentage, it obviously differs. But as is typical for Leafs Nation, Nathan MacKinnon gets his record-setting contract. And everyone turns to what Austin Matthews' next contract looks like. And he's undoubtedly going to become the highest paid player in 2 years when he needs his next deal. And I even saw someone I think it might have been Jay Fresh, throw out that he thinks that he could honestly see Matthews just taking the max, which is currently $16.9 million a season. I think the exact number is just 20% of the cap or something along those lines. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think Matthews becomes like takes the most money he absolutely can? Do you think he goes to like 15 or what? Like, what do you think happens there? I know it's 2 years, but people are already talking about it, so we might as well.
It's 2 years, but there's really no reason to think he's going to slow down.
No.
I think 20% of the cap, that's a bit much. Like,
would that be
I
right
wouldn't.
Now? Let me go see what that would be right now.
Especially if, like, I wouldn't tie that much into the cap. I think he will become the highest paid player. If the cap goes up little bumps the next couple of years, he'll probably come in 14 maybe. And it depends, too, if he wants to start a bidding war in free agency.
So right now, I think the max a player can earn is 20% of the cap. That would be $16.5 million. I could genuinely see Matthews in 2 years from now, in 2 years' time, the cap likely will have gone up or will be expected to go up very shortly after Matthews gets or Matthews' new contract kicks in. I could definitely see him going to 15, adding an extra $3 million on top of his current cap hit. He's at 11.6, go up to 15. I could see it. He seems like he has the demeanor to make as much money as he can. That's obviously, I don't think that that's a negative thing. I know hockey culture might see it a different way, but I don't think a player wanting to make as much money as they can is a negative thing. And I don't fault for MacKinnon for taking as much money as he could. At the end of the day, it's a livelihood, and hockey culture has a lot of people thinking differently in terms of taking team friendly deals. Kind of a slow news day. I mean, like, training camp's underway. The rookie tournament just happened. So I think before we throw it over to the Locked On boys, unless you have anything else on MacKinnon's contract, we all saw it coming, so it's not terribly newsworthy. Did you catch any of Montreal's rookie showcase games or anything like that? Or maybe highlights?
I wasn't able to watch any live. I watched highlights, like game recaps.
What did you think? Or do you have an opinion on how Juraj Slafkovský look? Apparently, again, this is like my Twitter feed is very like Ottawa Senators biased. So there could be some definite like hate going on here. But I saw a lot of tweets saying that he didn't look terribly amazing for a first overall pick.
He didn't wow, I would say. Like, it wasn't, you know, obviously he's nowhere near McDavid. But like, when you go to watch McDavid play, you're watching him. You're not watching where the puck is. Like, I remember when I first went to Edmonton games in Ottawa, like, I was watching McDavid back check. I wasn't watching the rush. Right. He's definitely not stealing the show at that level. But it's three games. It's a completely new set of line mates, teammates. And it's his first time on North American ice. Like, it is a lot going on. So I don't really, like, I'm not worried about it.
That's fair. I personally, like, from a neutral perspective, I'm not worried about it either. He's 18 years old. He was just drafted. And like you said, it's his first time on North American ice. But that was just a discourse that I saw, and I was curious to get a Habs fan's take on it, just because I didn't watch much of the rookie showcase at all, and let alone see highlights of the Canadians. So
have you seen the one play of him getting bumped into as he cut across the ice with his head down?
That was sick. That was sick. Like, he's a massive human being.
He's like, what was he? I think top 10 heaviest players.
Something like that already, and he's 18 years old. Like, he's probably not even fully filled out.
He obviously needs to keep his head up in that situation. There are guys at the NHL level that'll knock him out with that kind of tendency to cut in the ice with your head down. But it was pretty funny to see. It looks like someone's about to get their career ended by Scott Stevens, and then the guy just falls over.
It was like a tree. Like, he just stood up straight. Yeah. Like, it wasn't a reverse hit. He just completely absorbed the hit and went on his way.
He didn't know he was coming. It just kind of shocked him, and he was like, what happened?
Yeah, and what did I just hit? What's Slafkovský, like 6'4", 240? Something ridiculous?
Yeah, a long day.
He's massive, so he'll be fun to watch. Do you think he's going to be on the team this year, or do you think he's going to get the 9-game trial sort of thing? Or
I think he's going to be on the team. I think he'll be the only top pick to get more than 9 games this year.
Who else went top 5? Sorry, I'm drawing a blank on this draft. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Slafkovský. Nemec went second, right? And then third, yeah, was
I think
Cooley, then Shane Wright.
Cooley's going back to college, I believe.
Yeah.
Shane Wright will get 9, but I think he needs another year at junior for consistency.
Yeah.
And part of it, honestly, thinking Slack was going to be up is the fact that he was first overall to the Montreal Canadiens. It might not be the right choice, but it's the choice they'll probably make.
He's also got the NHL body, right? Like, he's not undersized. He's not skinny. He's not underdeveloped. Like, he's an NHL body already. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of decisions they make. But yeah, so we're going to cut this short. We're throwing it over to the Locked On boys, Jack, unless you've got anything else.
Cool.
All righty. Yeah, NHL season underway, and we've got Ross and Pilsy coming on. So go and enjoy that. Hello, everyone. We are proud to welcome Pilsy and Ross from the Locked On Senators podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network. Probably our biggest guest so far. This is our third episode with guests. How are you guys doing? Welcome to the show.
Man, we appreciate it. It's great to see you guys get it off the ground. I know we spoke right before you guys were going to get rolling on this, and seems like you guys are off and running. So it's great to be here and looking forward to another season of Sens hockey. It's back, and the vibes are immaculate around the fan base. So you love to see it.
Yeah, anytime we can chat Sens, it's a good time for me.
Unreal. Yeah. We did talk to the Locked On boys when we were starting to get some advice. So it's pretty cool how it's come full circle, kind of. I think this will be our 28th episode. Ryan and Jack, do you guys remember?
Yeah, 28th episode. And just looking back to that initial meeting, it's kind of funny just how things progress so quickly. Like, even back then, we didn't even know how to get YouTube up and working. We were talking to you guys, I remember that. So, thank you for taking that time and taking the time now. It should be a great conversation.
Yeah, looking forward to it. So what's the vibe right now? How are you guys feeling going into the year?
So pumped. I guess so home opener is 4 weeks from yesterday. So it's kind of creeping up. Preseason starting soon. The rookie tournament's going on. I think might've just ended or whatever. But it's definitely fun seeing like actual hockey on the Twitter timeline now.
Yeah.
Instead of just talking random stuff.
Yeah, having the Sens timeline back up and running for games again, it feels like home. I don't know. It's getting excited, or really exciting. And I'm looking forward to it here.
Sorry, Jack.
Oh, I was just gonna say it's a new feeling to not be worried when all these players are just gonna leave.
Yeah.
I've never looked up on it. Definitely. So I think first question, what are you guys most looking forward to come game one against Buffalo? I mean, like, there's a lot to look forward to, a lot of moving parts, but like, what's the big thing that jumps out to you that you're looking forward to seeing on your TV?
I'm stoked for that line of Alex DeBrincat, Tim Stützle, and Claude Giroux. I mean, Tim Stützle coming into his third year, the final years of the entry-level contract, just signed the richest deal in Ottawa Senators franchise history. And how do we kick that off? We get to watch him play with a 40-plus goal scorer and one of the most respected veterans in the league in Claude Giroux, and a guy that can still get it done offensively. Because Tim Stützle, he hasn't exactly had the best line mates, or I'll say more appropriately, line mates that kind of suit his skill set, right? Like, we love Connor Brown, but he's more of a two-way defensive checking forward. And Alex Formanton is great and he's got the speed, but he's not really the guy that can kind of give and go with Tim Stützle the way we want. So having him being able to feed to Brinkett for easy assists, and then Claude Giroux can help him out in the face-off dot, I think for me that line is going to be so exciting to watch.
Yeah, and the fact that Pilsy mentioned there with the face-offs at the end, that's such a big part. And I think this is a little overblown. We had Mert Mathod on, and he kind of rolled his eyes at this one. But I think the fact that DeBrincat spent the last 3-4 years learning from Patrick Kane, there's some stylistic comparisons with Tim Stützle. So they're at different parts of the ice, maybe you can be like, hey, Kane does this or does this, and maybe even help him out from a standpoint, even though he's still kind of up and coming himself, only being 24 years old. But before all of what happened in July, I'm going to stick with that for what I'm most excited about. We got such a tease last year when Jake Sanderson signed his entry-level deal, but wasn't recovered in time to play. So seeing 85 back there is going to be interesting. And there are obviously huge expectations for him right off the bat. You're not dipping your toe in. He's going to be playing 18, 20 minutes from the get-go. And I think that if there's a prospect that can handle it, He seems like he's mature beyond his years on the ice. So I'm really excited to see how he impacts not only the decor as a whole, but how many minutes he'll be able to alleviate Thomas Chabot from playing those 28, 30, 32 minute games that is just unsustainable throughout an 82 game season.
Yeah. And just touching on the comparison there with Patrick Kane, like Tim Stützle, that comparison has been brought up to him and he seems more than willing to take on that pressure, which I think is the most, almost one of the most impressive things about him. Like he knows how much pressure there is on him in this rebuild and he seems to take it in stride. So it'll be really, really exciting to see what he can do with some top end talent on his wings now.
It's pretty wild how going into the season, like I would say maybe the third or fourth most exciting sort of Senators debut is their fifth overall pick from 2 years ago. Like you could easily, I'm personally more excited to see Alex DeBrincat in a Sens uniform, Giroux, like see those guys. And then you could even argue Talbot's going to be an even more impactful first year Senator than Jake Sanderson, which is absolutely insane to say given the last 5 years or whatever. It's pretty nuts. And so that being said for game one, what about the home opener? We know you guys are going to be there. You got what? 400 tickets that
more than
you guys
double.
Doled out more than that.
Are we around 800 now, Ross?
I think 850 now. Yeah, it's great. They get scooped up right away. And it's going to be an absolute time. We can't wait. We've done this twice before. I guess the first game last year, though, we didn't put on any sort of event. It was just boots on the ground. It was us and the Leafs marching that went there and it was against the Leafs. So I'm actually happy it's not against the Leafs. Because last year we saw the Leafs and the Habs, and like they're fun. The Sens won both games, and the other team's fans beat the traffic and all that. Those are fun, but I think it'll be nice to start off against Boston, which is a team that you need points from early in the year when they're without Marchand and without McAvoy. So you need to get a jump on them in the standings early. So there's again, just like Jake Sanderson, this team can't dip their toe. They need to be better out the gate. Understatement of the year: 4 wins in the first 20 games, back to back years. That's unacceptable. I think even under 500 at the end of this first homestand would be unacceptable because you're looking at a situation, they're in Buffalo, in Toronto, and then you have 5 straight at home. Like that's probably up there. I haven't checked the whole schedule yet, but that's got to be up there for longest homestand of the year. So to get it out of the way early and have some beatable teams like Arizona's coming to town the first Saturday, that's almost a must-win game right off the bat. Not going to put the label on it 100%, but you want to feel good about this group going forward. And the home opener is the best place to start. So when it comes to our event, we just want to be community builders. We just want to be guys who can bring people together, which is kind of funny to say when Pilsy lives, 600 kilometers away from the CTC and I'm closer to 2000 kilometers away, but obviously I'm born and raised in Ottawa. So it's easy for us to both stay at my parents' place and all that. And then we're going to be at Stanley's before the game. We're going to be fired up, got some $5 pint specials and food specials coming. And then the pilgrimage to the CTC, it's a great, 15 minute walk, get some fresh air and get ready to pack the barn with 18,000 of my best friends.
So what's this going to look like? Do you guys have like a few sections booked off? Or are you guys going to be all scattered around the rink or what? How does that work?
Well, it started with just 2 and then Pilsy. Now it's the whole top bowl.
Yeah. I mean, we started, we just wanted to have a section. And then when that sells out in 4 or 5 minutes, we kind of had to call an audible and get some more tickets, but it's the home opener and everybody's fired up for this. So it's not like it was like nice, neat sections all together, easily available. So we just tried to get as many group discount tickets as we could. We want to get the more, the merrier, the more Sens fans we can get into that building at a discounted price. That's what it's all about. Like Ross said, we're up near 800 tickets sold through our group discount. So we're happy all you sickos are going to be joining us. And we're just waiting on word to hear from the Ottawa Senators when they're going to change the arena to the Locked On Senators arena. It should be pretty soon here.
Yeah. And
I vouch for it.
You guys know what the capacity on Stanley's is? Are you guys going to max it out there or what?
Well, I don't know. So we did the Stanley's before last time. It was last April against the Habs and it was a Saturday, right? This, I think a lot of people are going to be taking it off work, the home opener, from what I've gathered already. But if not, it is a Tuesday night. So we have no expectations other than we know we're going to be having a good time. And this is not like a meet and greet where it's like, we're anything but just another one of the guys. Like, it's just, yeah, we want a place to drink. We want to be able to have people as a community all there, being able to email the GM at the restaurant and say, hey, we got a bunch of people coming. What kind of specials can you offer us? Or we'll take our business elsewhere. And the people at Stanley's have been so awesome with us. That, yeah, I think $5 pints is a perfect way to start. Martian, he's not here, but I'd like on his behalf to say it will be a bad day to be a Molson at Stanley's. Molson, Bud Light, both $5. So no, we don't have any expectations. We just want to mingle and get to know all these great Sens fans. And it's just the perfect place, being so close to the arena. Life hack: free parking at the Sensplex versus at the CTC. I know in December through February, it's probably not as ideal, but at the start of the year, at the end of the year, it's an awesome way to really get into the zone. It's the next best thing to having a downtown arena.
Yeah. And then I guess you don't have to go an hour and a half early to try to get a spot in the,
just go 3 hours early and have a few pints.
Yeah, there you go.
What sections do you guys have for the game?
Ross, you're better at this than I am.
It's a couple rows in each one, pretty much at this point. Like, so what they kept doing, they tried to put full rows together. But I mean, again, I said it's 18,000 of your best friends. Like, it doesn't matter if you get a single ticket and you're in another section. I mean, it's high fives all around when the Sens score, right? So it's it's all good. And we'll be in 320 though. That's where we were last April. Nice 6-4 clean victory against Montreal. Scored the 4 goals in like 5 minutes during the second period. Obviously, it was a fun game there. Kaslik scored his first goal, had to fight at the same time, and it was a lot of fun. So we're excited that more people are gathering on. Seems on par with how the Sens franchise is doing right now, where it seems like a lot of things are on the up in terms of sponsors coming back, fans coming out of the woodworks, and it's great. It's a great inclusive environment, and it's something that we're just trying to foster here with getting people together before the game. And hopefully the team answers in kind with a great performance on the ice.
I'll be in 309. So I'll hope to see you guys there.
Nice.
Looking forward to it.
Heck yeah. Fired up. Are you guys going to be there, Jackson, Ryan?
Unfortunately, I'm in Halifax for school at the moment, so I will not be able to trek home for the home opener, but I do have most of December off. So I'm hoping Mitchell, will be kind enough to lend me his second ticket to come to a
There you go. Hey, just ask him nice enough. Hey, it's tough out in Halifax. I lived there for 2 years. Like, those West Coast games don't start till 11:30 sometimes. It's tough. Yeah. That's tough.
It's going to be tough, but yeah.
Jack, you'll persevere though. We got faith in you, buddy.
Oh yeah.
I'm up in Thunder Bay, so it's a little bit of a trek for me.
But... Awesome. You're up my way, man.
Nice. So sort of transitioning here, we talked about what we're most excited for. What do you guys think is the most like sort of underrated aspect of the team going into this season? What are people not talking about enough?
That's a tough one. I would say, like, obviously all the hype is about the top six, right? Like the two top lines, Brady, Norris, Batherson, then DeBrincat, Stützle, and Drew are obviously amazing. It's going to be so exciting. I think this team's bottom six is going to be better than people are kind of hyping up. Like that, the fourth line of Kelly, Gambrell, Watson, and then a third line of Tyler Mott, Pinto, and Matthew Joseph. I think they're going to do a good job of obviously playing a tough to play against, physical, grinding game, up-tempo, like any DJ Smith bottom six is going to play. But mix in Matthew Joseph in there, you're going to get some good offense. We've seen what he can do in his short sample size in Ottawa. And then guys like Shane Pinto, I think, you know, like, this guy was slated to be a second line center on this team for 2 years. And unfortunately, injuries kept him out of the lineup and he hasn't had that chance. So seeing him on a third line role, I think, can really do some good. And then a fourth line of Kelly, Gambrell, and Watson. Sure, they're not going to put up big points offensively, but I think they're going to do a really good job of shutting other teams' lines down and getting under their skin. Like, we saw Parker Kelly, we like to call him the shift disturber, because every shift he's on, he's disturbing the other players and he's getting under their skin. Austin Watson doing what he does out there, blocking shots, throwing hits. And then Dylan Gambrell, I know he's not a flashy guy, but he's really good defensively. His face-off numbers are good. And that's a guy DJ Smith likes, obviously, that brought him back on another contract. So I really think this bottom six is better than people are giving credit for.
I think outside Ottawa, it's got to be Anton Forsberg being kind of an unknown commodity. He was unreal last year. Now, we know goalies can be voodoo. Will he do that again? I think a lot of people outside of Ottawa would already be like, all right, Talbot's a starter, and then they brought in this guy, and then Forsberg's the backup. I mean, camp dependent to an extent, but I told Pilsy the other day on Locked On Sens, I said, I'm starting Forsberg game one against Buffalo. And
part
of that too, you get Talbot on the road against Toronto in the second game, kind of a taste of the Battle of Ontario right out of the gate. And I think he'll answer well there. But to me, it's a super open battle in goal. And I honestly probably lean Forsberg is getting more starts this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great segue to where I was going next. Knowing you guys are a hashtag goalie friendly show. How do you feel about the goaltenders this offseason? Because I've seen a lot of discussion on Twitter, obviously mainly from Sens Twitter. We're very excited about it. It seems to be the most solidified the crease has been in some time. So how do you feel that this tandem ranks kind of from what you've seen from the crease in your times as fans, like dating back to, like, I don't know when the last time we saw a tandem this good was. And maybe that's going too far without seeing them on the ice yet. But I think that this is, I think it's going to be a great year in the crease for this end.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Definitely better than the last couple of years we've seen. And I think the big difference here is a lot of teams are getting away from that. This guy's your starter. He's going to play 60, 65 games. And this other guy is just going to come in back to backs. Like, other than the teams that have Vasilevskis, your Connor Hellebucks, your really main guys, a lot of teams are shying away from that. And I think the burnout is legit, especially like you look at a guy like Connor Hellebuck. He's been playing almost every game for the Jets for so long. And it just seems like come playoffs, come meaningful games, he's out of gas. And I think if you have two veteran goalies like the Ottawa Senators do in Forsberg and Talbot, sure, Forsberg doesn't have a lot of games played, but he's in his late 20s. He's been around a while. He knows how to take care of himself. We had Mad Sogard on our show, and he was talking about watching Anton Forsberg's work ethic and how he prepares for games. This is a guy that wants to be ready to go every game of the year, and then have him competing with Cam Talbot for that starting goalie job. It's going to be a 1A, 1B type scenario here, which is great because also the Senators have had kind of seasons where they have a veteran goalie and then it's young goalie prospects trying to battle for a position for that backup spot. And ultimately, it doesn't really work. And that's why we saw Philip Gustafson shipped out of town for Cam Talbot. Sure, you're looking at a goalie prospect that the Sens protected in the expansion draft. That's how much kind of faith they had in him, in Gustafson. And there's maybe a lot of potential you're leaving on the table and sending over to the Minnesota Wild. But you're getting in return a stable guy in Cam Talbot that is very comfortable playing a 1A, 1B type role because he's had to do it for a while and he's comfortable trying to take over that spot. So I think the tandem of Talbot and Forsberg is going to do this team a lot of good, and having DJ Smith and the fans confident in whoever is playing in goal every single night is going to be a huge boost.
Yeah. And just in terms of the quality of the tandem, like both, when do you think is the last time the Sens have been that secure in that position?
Secure is interesting. I think I want to see a little bit more of Anton Forsberg, because I could just point back to 2016-17 where you didn't expect Mike Condon to do much when he was hired for a fifth round pick, but he held the team in it through the middle part of the season. What did he start, like 30 games in a row?
That was insane. Yeah,
it was crazy. And he kept them afloat, so I don't want to discount that, but certainly this one has a little more lengthy potential with Forsberg. Again, I'm a little higher on him. Talbot's a nice spark plug, certainly better than Philip Gustafson going into this season. But I think with Forsberg being signed for 3 years, you think that'll age better than Condon's 3-year deal, although injuries definitely played a part. If you're a goalie without hips, you're not a goalie anymore, basically. and that's what happened to Mike Condon. But I'll go back to that 2016-17 season, and it's tough because I actually liked the pair when they had Craig Anderson and Anders Nielsen, but that was when the team was at its absolute worst defensively. So it's hard to judge those guys just as goalies when the D was who they had like Golubev played like 30 games that year. They had Bergdorf were in there for a bunch of games. Yeah. Like that was bare bones on the back end for the Senators, I think 2018-19 season. So I like where they're at though. I think it's good. I still would like to see them both kind of push each other. And after this year, I'll have a better answer for you because that 16-17 team was fun. Anderson was awesome. And then Condon came in and played well.
Yeah. And Jack, being a goalie guy yourself, how do you see the Sens goalie situation right now?
I like it. I think as it was touched on, the 1A, 1B thing is really what teams go to now. You can't ride someone for 60-70 games. And when you have two good goalies, you have a safety net, really. If one's cold, the other can be hot. And we all know how weird goalies are. But yeah, like as mentioned, the quality of the team in front of them is a lot different this year. And even like a guy like Alex DeBrincat, who's going to score hopefully 40 again and isn't top tier defensively, he's still having more offense is the best way to play defense. So that's going to make a difference. Puck possession is going to make a difference. And even just compared to last year, it's going to be quite a bit easier for these goalies.
So adding on to the DeBrincat conversation, I don't think it's getting more attention after the Sens had their media day and DeBrincat kind of hinted at being in a wait and see mode for his next contract. Everyone knows he's a restricted free agent with that $9 million qualifying offer at this time next year. I personally think it's going to be a bridge deal situation where he signs like a 3-year deal, becomes the highest paid guy on the Sens sort of thing, if it happens. But I'm curious to get some people like who you guys talk about the Sens every day. What do you guys think like Alex DeBrincat's future in Ottawa looks like?
Oh, I think it's too early to answer that. You got to wait till he plays a little bit. I know that they can talk him contract extension, but even just where he is in his own life, like 24 years old, he's got a kid under 1 year old. Like, I wouldn't blame him if he waits until the end of this season. And it's not the end of the world for Ottawa. This isn't the situation where they acquired a UFA where he can just walk. At the very least, they've got him under control for the next 2 years. So I don't think there's much rush. I think that we'd be spoiled if we get that news based on all the extensions that Pierre Dorion has already put pen to paper on. I think the next move would be Artem Zub, get him locked up versus DeBrincat. But I'm expecting a big year from him, and he knows it too. Going into his prime and a new situation. He's a guy who's been talked down on over the years for his size, second round pick after scoring 55 goals in 50 games or whatever it was in Erie in the OHL. And, you can't do it without Connor McDavid. Oh, you can't do it against grown men. Oh, you've got Patrick Kane. Well, now he's legit star in the league. I think that he was rated on NHL Network. They had him as like the 20th best player or something like that, maybe 27. But he's right up there as a growing stud. I think his stock's only going to go higher and higher. He's making $9 million in real money this year, even though the cap hits at 6.4. So I think any extension, if I'm going to spitball, I'm not saying it's going to happen anytime soon, but I think you get him at like a Mark Stone type contract. What was it? 8 at 9.5, something like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's the type of player you're looking at. And it would almost be better for the team because Stone signed it at 28. He'd be signing at 24, 25. But that's the type of player you're getting with Alex DeBrincat. He's going to be a star.
Yeah. Like you said, it is way too early to tell, but do you think it would be sustainable to add another long-term contract like that to this forward group?
It's a good question. I'll let Pilsy hit on it more, but all I'll say is like, I don't know how high the salary cap's going to go, but after next year, it's jumping. It hasn't moved in five years, and they're recovering from the pandemic pretty well. Jersey ads are going to affect it. I think it's going up like 90 million. Like, that's my guess. It goes up like 8 mil. So under that, Pilsy, you think that they can fit it all in?
I think so. I mean, everybody's kind of... It's tough when you see all these guys sign massive deals out of their entry-level contracts. You start thinking, oh, salary cap's going to be an issue. But, boys, this isn't the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, none of these guys are making more than $10 million. So, like, that just alone makes things so much more digestible. You look at the Drake Batherson contract, like, that's looking like an absolute steal right now. So, I think you're going to be able to fit this in, especially because the Sens, their prospect pipeline is still decent. So if you have to filter in a couple of young guys on ELCs, you can make that work. And I think it's sustainable. And look, if you can lock up a 40 plus goal scorer in his mid 20s, I'll take that. Like, even if it seems a little risky, I'll put the house money. I'll bet on Alex DeBrincat being a smart contract to lock in long-term, even though it's too early. We haven't seen how he meshes with the team. Does he like the city? What's his life like outside of hockey? All those kinds of things needed to be considered, but I would have no issue if they say, hey, look, we've got Norris, Brady, Batherson, Joseph, Timmy, all these guys locked up. You want to be a part of this? Let's get it done.
So quickly on that point, in the year 2025-26, which I think 2 years ago, they didn't have anyone signed beyond 2 years, pretty much, outside of Thomas Chabot. The cap-friendly page was basically just a blank canvas.
And now, Colin White, that was it.
Yeah. Now you've got a bunch of arrows where they don't even have it in their six-year projection, all of the years that Ottawa has. But if you look at real money, which is what matters more to the Senators versus the cap hit, 2025-26, they already have a ton of money committed. Brady's going to be making 10.5. Shabbat's going to be making 10. Norris is making 9.5. Stutzel's making 9. And Batherson's making 6.5 in real money. That's a lot of cash to be dishing out at that point. So maybe let's circle that as a time where the Senators' new arena is under construction and so corporate sponsors are swarming left and right, because I don't know if that is sustainable for the revenue that Ottawa's been generating right now, cap hit aside. That's a lot of money to be paying all these guys in that upcoming season.
I actually didn't realize that was the real money for that year, but I think that's the same year that the NHL's TV deal expires. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure they're supposed to get a new TV deal in around there. That'll fall in line with when the cap jumps up a bunch. So
4 years from now, who cares? Let's just enjoy this while we can.
Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, so just looking forward ahead to this year, we just finished our division previews, and all three of us have the Ottawa Senators as a wildcard team in the Atlantic Division. Two of us also have them going up against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round. So first, how do you feel about the Ottawa Senators potentially being a playoff team this year? And second, how would you feel about a potential Battle of Ontario in round one?
I'm with you guys. I think the wild card is attainable. I don't think getting in the top three when you've got Toronto, Florida, Tampa, Boston, like, that's going to be tough. So I think the aim is for the wild card. And look, if they can sneak into a wild card, I think this team is built deep enough, other than the defensive core, which maybe gets an upgrade at the trade deadline if they're looking like they're going to get into a playoff position here. I think this team has a good chance to make some noise in the playoffs, especially when you've got the offensive output that the top six does. Up against the Leafs, I like our chances. I mean, I would say the Sens have a little bit more depth. Obviously, I'm not about to sit here and say they have a better player than Austin Matthews. The guy put up 60 goals last year, so it's pretty tough to beat that. So there's definitely some heavy star-studded power for the Leafs up front, but we've seen what happens to them in the playoffs. When it comes down to crunch time, they just can't get it done. And I'm not too worried about the goaltenders they're going to have in their crease come playoff time. Let's just say that.
And Ross, how do you feel?
I wouldn't sleep that whole series. That would be heartbreaking. I don't think I've been into an NHL game as much as I was game 7, Tampa, Toronto, as I have been since Ottawa was in the playoffs. I was heavily invested, not only with our friends at Bet Online, but also just emotionally for this 18-year stretch that was one shot, one goal away from being over forever. No, it continues 19 straight years now without a playoff series win. I would be so sad if it was snapped against the Ottawa Senators, because their last playoff series win was also against Ottawa. I don't know if I could handle that emotionally, but that series would be a lot of fun. Kind of taking that out of it, I think on the ice, it would be, the storylines would be endless.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they'd be pulling up photos, Matthews and Brady Tkachuk, when they were like 12 years old. I know that Matthews and Matthew Tkachuk are great friends. You get that kind of storyline. You get the skill versus the, you know, more brawn of the Senators, although Dubas is kind of listened enough to the outside noise that he's kind of added a little meat on his team over the years as well. But damn, I don't even want to think about that. I hope they get like Florida in the first. I can't hear about the
there's no good options for a first round.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
And then obviously you don't want Tampa. Bring us Vasilevsky, eh, Pilsy?
Imagine the outrage in Toronto, though, over, like, they would have to clear house if over the past 5 years they had this dominating regular season run, losing in the first round every year. Meanwhile, Ottawa's bottom five, drafting their next superstar every year. And then all of a sudden they face in the first round and Ottawa beats them. Like, oh my gosh, what a storybook. Yeah, what a storybook ending to the Kyle Dubas era in Toronto. That'd be,
yeah, especially because Montreal's already beat them once. So if we get our turn, Boston's already beat them as well. It's just like everyone passed them around in the division. But honestly, I think that that whole era is done this year if they lose in the first round, no matter what.
Oh, 100%. So yeah,
I wouldn't mind seeing Tampa smack them around again. Because Tampa did not play very well in the start of that series. They got blown out in two of those games by Toronto. So I want to see Tampa Toronto next year. Give it to me again.
All right. So we got about 4 minutes left here. So we'll try to wrap this up. Ryan and Jack, unless you guys have anything else to add, I've got one last question.
Yeah, no. Fire away.
So this top six is disgusting. We got Giroux, we got DeBrincat, Stützle, Tkachuk, Norris, Batherson. Who's leading this team in points and who's leading this team in goals this year? Who you got?
Pilsy, you always ask this question, but I haven't heard your answer for it.
Leading in points, I'm going to go with Tim Stützle. I mean, when you have DeBrincat and Giroux, and I think he's going to come into the season so confident. I think he's going to lead in points for sure. He's going to be a part of that top power play unit. Like, it's just poised for him to have a massive breakout season. And leading in goals, it's tough to argue anyone else other than DeBrincat. I mean, if you wanted to throw Josh Norris in that conversation, seeing as he had 35 goals in 66 games last year, if he plays a full 82, it's not crazy to think that he could hit 40. But also, he was shooting at a 20% success clip last year. I think that's probably going to go down a little bit. So I'll say Tim Stützle leads in points, Alex DeBrincat leads in goals. Those two kind of go hand in hand, actually. So that works out.
Yeah, and two assists for every goal, potentially. So you get Timmy gets the edge on points there. Just to be different, I'll say Brady Tkachuk for the simple reason he's led this team in points the last two seasons, and I think he's going to be better than ever here. If you don't think he's got a little boost of adrenaline with the moves that they have, he said, I know it's best shape of your life season. It's I've never been more excited already season. So take it with a grain of salt. But I can sense it from him as well. The Future Sickos guys did a great interview with him, and he just has this glow to him. Great life off the ice, got engaged this offseason. He's seeing the team start engaging with good players coming in over the last couple seasons. Hasn't been that way in the summer. So he's going to be fired up. He hit 30 goals this year. I think that he can easily, with a little more finishing around the net, could be up towards 40. So I'm going to throw it back to you boys. I want a quick answer from each of you. Which line combines for more points? Is it going to be the Drake, Josh, Brady line or the Stützle, Giroux, DeBrincat unit?
Ryan, you want to go first?
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go the Timmy line. I think him and DeBrincat are going to be just special together, and add Giroux in there too. Who I still think is a very productive player. I'm probably expecting like 60 plus points still from Giroux. So that's hard to beat if you're thinking Tim Stützle maybe 80 plus points and then DeBrincat 40 plus goals. I'll go with that one.
Jack?
I got to go with the same there. And it's really crazy too to see Giroux as kind of the number three option on this line. And it is like a homecoming year for him. I'm expecting big things.
I'm going to go with the Norris, Batherson, Tkachuk line. I like the chances of that line exploding. Not that they didn't last year, but Batherson missed a lot of time. Even Norris missed some time. And there might be an adjustment period with that Timmy line. So I guess we'll see. But I'm going to go with last year's top line to put up more points. But yeah, we've got a minute left. This was really awesome. We really appreciate you guys taking time out of your busy schedules to join us. And if you guys want to wrap this up by maybe throwing out where people can follow you and listen, give yourself a quick plug.
Sounds good. I mean, we're on Twitter at Sens Central, always interacting there, on Instagram, LockedOn.Senators. And the best way to help the show grow is to subscribe on YouTube as well. That really helps us out. So we appreciate it. And we appreciate all of you guys, Ryan, Jackson, and Mitchell, for having us on. It's a huge honor to be one of your first guests. And we're continuing to be proud of you guys. You said you're proud to welcome. Well, we're proud of you guys continuing on here. And here's to a great season of Sens hockey.
Yeah, unreal.
Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Have a good one.